From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Martha Stewart left federal prison in Alderson, West Virginia early today, marking the start of a fascinating comeback campaign. The domestic doyen's pre-prison, pre-trial hard edge is being painted a little softer, softened by prison. Stewart was long seen as a tough, rich woman whose souffles never sank, who never had a bad hair day. She set the bar pretty high, and with a felony conviction, fell fairly short. Well, a little jail time may have been just what her hard-charging diva image needed. Today, Stewart called prison life a life-altering experience, and she begins her five-month house arrest with two new television shows in the works and a company whose stock price has soared even as it faces $60 million in losses. Martha's still got plenty of challenges ahead, but the billionaire ex-con is playing the rejuvenation card, the card of atonement, in an era when jail time may be the ultimate makeover. Tonight on Point, crime, punishment, and the rebirth of the billionaire ex-con Martha Stewart. We begin tonight in New York, where Charlie Gasparino has been covering Martha Stewart's release for Newsweek magazine. He joins me now. Charlie, thanks for being with us.
Hi, how are you?
We're great. So give us the story from, it was just after midnight when she got on her private jet in West Virginia and jetted off to where, Charlie?
Unfortunately, I was actually watching that whole spectacle last night, staying up late.
Oh, you were there in West Virginia?
Well, no. I was on another show watching it as we were sitting around commenting on, we see a car starting up. Oh, that might be Martha.
Right.
And missing the money shot until she got into her plane where she smiled and waved to everybody. I mean, listen, she was leaving West Virginia, jumped on, had about a 15-minute cab ride or car ride to the airport.
Yeah.
Where they flew to Westchester County Airport in New York State. And from there, it was probably about a half-hour car ride to her estate in Bedford.
Okay.
Where she is today.
Give us the basics. First of all, on her so-called house arrest or house confinement, she can be out for 48 hours a week. That doesn't sound like too tough a confinement.
No. I mean, this is not exactly, cracking rocks in the yard or anything. This is a really good deal. Listen, she clearly lied. She didn't do the right thing. She might have lied about something that wasn't a crime, but the bottom line is that Martha Stewart did lie, and she violated the law. She's a convicted felon.
It was a felony. She went to jail. So she's got 5 months here where she can work. She can do anything related to work. And when she's at home in that wonderful house in the midst of those 153 acres, what can she be out?
153-room house.
probably. Can she be out, dusting off the crocuses and riding her horses, or is she more restricted than that?
Well, from what I understand, she can do a lot of stuff. She has to get it somehow approved by her parole officer. One thing I found out that she absolutely can't do, she can't drink. And for me, that would be a big pain in the rear end because I like a glass of wine at the end of the night.
At least
one glass of wine. But
Martha might like that. We see she can leave the house for religious observance, for health care.
Right.
She cannot go to any of her other three houses. I guess she's got a big one in Maine, a big one in the Hamptons,
right.
A big one in Westport, Connecticut. She can't go there.
I feel really bad for her about that. Yeah.
Well, someone needs to do the spring cleaning out there. In prison, what do we know about how she liked that life? We're reading all kinds of things lately.
She communicated with some people saying that she wasn't too crazy about the food, and that she actually suggested that somehow she was being that some of the prisoners are malnourished.
Well, there have been big budget cuts, to be fair, and little things she did notice. I mean, they only get
milk once a
week or something now. They don't have cereal
once a day.
Okay, I mean, it doesn't take Martha Stewart to want perhaps milk more than once a day. In fairness, they are cutting that budget back.
Right.
She was cleaning the administrative offices there, including the toilets. We're told for $5 and something an hour. Not exactly her regular rate of pay.
Right. And not that she needs the money either. I mean, what makes this story so bizarre is that it's obviously Martha Stewart doing this. If this was anybody else, average person, no one would care. And I do feel sorry for her because her crime was kind of minuscule compared to I've written a book called Blood on the Street, which is a chronicle of all the corporate scams over the last couple of years, And I can tell you this, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, this doesn't even, like, rank up to any of these guys.
Right.
Yet we are fixated on, like, you know, how she was dressed in prison and, you know, how many toilets she cleaned and things of that nature.
What does she face now when she goes back to the office, first of all? $60 million in losses last year. She's not the CEO or the chairman or anything more. She's just the founder, though she makes $900 grand a year.
But the stock is booming, you know what I'm saying? And you know,
down 3 points today, but still at a very high point. It was $8 and something not long ago, now $30 plus.
Right. I think it's way overvalued, though. I think that there's really a sort of roll of dice as to whether this company can survive.
She's still appealing. She's still appealing her conviction, and she's still got SEC charges against her. How might those things play out?
Well, appealing the conviction. I think that's not going to happen. I mean, she is doing it right,
but it's not going to succeed.
No. And if she gets it overturned, I don't think she wants to go to trial. I mean, you have a chance if you get the appeal, win the right for an appeal. You like another trial. I mean, who wants another trial?
And she's done the time already anyway.
Done the time. The SEC charge is the most fascinating thing, and we broke that in Newsweek last week. That essentially, she could basically become chairman and CEO of Martha Stewart Living, run the company again much sooner under a potential deal with the SEC. See, the SEC has filed civil charges against her. As part of the civil charges, they want to bar her from ever running her company again.
Mm-hmm.
They're working out a sort of settlement agreement on that now.
An agreement that would involve money that she would
pay
them?
Maybe pay money. She'd have to agree to sign off on a consent decree where she neither confirms nor denies the charges, helps the SEC expand the insider trading law, their ability to crack down on insider trading.
Right.
And for Martha, she would probably get, instead of a lifetime bar, maybe a 2-year bar.
Which maybe she could live with, though she likes the reins of power. And if there's a fine involved, with the stock where it is, she's worth still about $1 billion. I guess she can afford to pay it.
That money is not going to be the issue. The issue here is like how much, you know, how much humble pie does she have to eat? You know, what are they going to make her sign on to?
To move on in life. Charlie, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Charlie Gasparino has been covering Martha Stewart's release for Newsweek magazine. He's also author of Blood on the Street, the sensational inside story of how Wall Street analysts duped a generation of investors. He spoke with me from New York. We are talking tonight about Martha Stewart's prison makeover. You can join the conversation. What do you make of the post-prison resurrection of Martha Stewart? Can a famous felon now gain in stature for doing jail time? And if so, why? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Lots to dive into tonight. Joining me in the studio is Nancy Kane, professor at Harvard Business School. She's an expert on business history, author of Brand New. Nancy Kane, thanks for being with us tonight.
A pleasure, Tom.
And joining us from Santa Clara, California, Kirk Hansen. He's a business ethicist and executive director of the Markola Center for Applied Ethics at Santa Clara University. Kirk Hansen, thank you for joining us.
Glad to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you both. Nancy Kane, first to you. There's all kinds of speculation and interpretation and analysis of Martha this week at a personal level, at a business level, at a cultural level. Tina Brown had a great piece on this. She says the jail thing is working so well for Martha Stewart. She says it demonstrates the national need for a theater of atonement. She says, but why should it work for Martha Stewart? It worked for Gandhi, for Nelson Mandela, for Martin Luther King. Time in jail, they came out noble. What do you make of what's going on with this business culture figure, Nancy?
I think that the Martha Stewart story, both before prison, even before the indictment, and all the way through, is at one very high level a story about social confusion around women's roles. What are women worth? What do they do in the boardroom, in the garden, in the kitchen, at the power table with the big boys?
And she was there.
And she was in all those places. So she's a very likely representative of a whole range of fears and anxieties and possibilities and ambitions for women themselves and for what men think about women who, you know, sit with them at the table. There aren't very many of them, but Martha certainly does.
You know the history of business. How unusual is it for a major business figure, a titan in her own realm, to come out of prison and be received with all this kind of positive energy?
Very unusual. And one has to look again to a second kind of high-level issue that you see here stepping back, and that's the role of the media. The role, you know, the ultimate jail is the ultimate comeback, the ultimate image, you know, resuscitation. And
you think that's just a media creation?
I think it has a lot to do with a very savvy media team at Living Omnimedia.
Oh, her kind of makeover team.
Oh, you bet.
Working on this.
You bet. This is their specialty. This is what they do. This is the part of the business model and the competencies of that firm, and they are using it in using all their powers, as the Godfather once said.
It's all about Martha. Kirk Hansen, you've written and thought a lot about the culture of cheating in the United States, and I've seen something you've got coming where you say the media even loves the celebrity who is caught cheating, making Martha Stewart a strange kind of icon for her noble prison behavior. So what's going on here?
Well, I think Martha is a great example of our ambiguous feelings about cheating. Certainly, she reflects all of the issues that Nancy talked about in terms of women's roles, but she's also a wonderful example of how Americans are not sure how they feel about cheating. Certainly, in a case where an individual seems to be taking the fall for a wider group that did the same things that she apparently did, they're sympathetic. But I think there's a sense in America that one almost has to cheat to get ahead. And I don't think people were surprised with much of what was going on Wall Street, and were not terribly surprised with the stories that Martha may have engaged in some insider trading. Granted, that wasn't what she was convicted of, but I don't think they were terribly surprised. What distinguishes her is that she took this very interesting step of accelerating her own prison term. In order to serve the time and come across, I believe, that was part of the media strategy, as a somewhat more sympathetic figure.
I am now humble. I have served time with the people, including her roommate, was in for dealing cocaine and will be there a lot longer than Martha Stewart. Nancy Kane, Kirk Hansen, please stand by. We're talking tonight about Martha Stewart's prison makeover and the rebirth of a billionaire ex-con. You can join us. Can a famous felon now gain stature from jail time? And has Martha paid her dues? Does she deserve a queenly comeback? We're at 1-800-423-8255. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking tonight about Martha Stewart's prison makeover and the rebirth of a billionaire ex-con. You can join the conversation tonight. When Martha says prison life was life-altering and life-affirming, do you believe her? And what does the Martha saga tell us about American culture today? Is it a good thing, what it tells us? Have our ideas about shame, taint, and redemption changed? Is that a good thing? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined tonight by Nancy Kane, a business historian, professor at Harvard Business School, by Kirk Hansen, a business ethicist, joining us tonight from Santa Clara University in California. And right now, from New York, Barbara Corcoran joins us. She's founder and chairman of the Corcoran Group, a leading New York real estate firm with 700 brokers and more than $5 billion in annual sales. Barbara Corcoran, thanks for being with us tonight.
Pleasure to be here.
I know we've just got you for a couple of minutes. We've asked you on because you've done big business for a long time as a woman. As Martha Stewart steps out of prison, you must be watching her reception along with the rest of us.
I sure am, and enjoying every minute of it.
Well, what thoughts are running through your mind? Does she deserve the kind of, clean slate or not?
Can I tell you, I think she's totally earned it. First of all, she's a brilliant marketer. It's no surprise that she leaves prison with blue jeans, a crocheted poncho, and black boots and 25 pounds thinner, and hires a flatbed truck so that everybody in the press can get an equal shot of her leaving the prison grounds.
She's got it all going on.
She's got it going. And then even take it farther back than that,
you know.
She was a brilliant delegator. She goes to prison, and in the time she's in prison, her stock goes from $10 to $38. Who does time in jail and makes money doing it? And she orchestrated everything before she even went into prison. So she's really handling this terrible chapter of her life in exactly the same way she's handled her entire rags-to-riches career, which is she's delegated well, she's picked the right people, and she's been meticulous about her detail.
We can see how she's working the big American population that supports her show, her magazine, her shows, it will be now. But what about in the tip-top tier of New York business society, where you run, where she runs. How's she going to be received there? Will she get a hero's welcome, or what do you expect?
She's going to, A, get a hero's welcome simply because she's risen from what people perceived to be in business, the dead, the prison cell. And secondly, she's going to get a hero's welcome from every woman out there who has struggled to drag themselves up from the ground up and make a success of themselves, and particularly in light of the fact that she, as a woman, has paid a bigger price than any man would have paid. Look at the sins of the guys with the suits on,
yep.
Enron, Tyco, MCIWorld.com.
Bernie Evers still in court. Mm-hmm.
Yes, the women who are hugely successful always pay a bigger price because it makes too many women and men uncomfortable.
But she is a convicted felon. Is there no price to be paid for that?
She paid the price, and the additional price now is she can never be the CEO of her corporation again.
Well, maybe not. There seems to be a chance, but at the moment she can't. That's for sure.
My God, what a penalty to pay. Of course she's paid, and I think that's why people are opening their arms with great respect and, if nothing else, just curiosity, but forgiveness, because she took it in the chin, she went to jail, she paid her dues, and no one in America doesn't like a great American comeback story.
Barbara Corcoran, we can hear how you have a seat at the table where Martha Stewart sits.
I'm not nearly as wealthy as she, but she totally has my respect.
Well, you're not doing too badly, and thanks for your perspective from that tier as another major woman in New York business. Thanks a lot for being with us tonight.
My pleasure.
Barbara Corcoran, founder and chairman of the Corcoran Group, $5 billion in annual sales. That's big. Nancy Kane, so here it is. Martha Stewart doesn't have a passport. The U.S. government's hanging on to that. There's a lot, as Barbara points out, that she cannot do right now. Look at the business of this for a minute with us. While she's been away, she's been replaced. She's not chairman. She's not CEO. Susan Lin came in from ABC, a big figure there. From a business side, they lost $60 million last year. Are advertisers going to come back into her magazine? Are they going to flock to her DV shows? Is American culture so forgiving that everything is just hunky-dory again or even better than before?
That's the business question. That's really the business question. That's not a popularity question. It's not a ratings question. It's a business model question. I'd say the company is fairly fragile with those kind of losses. And given the central role that Martha plays, everything depends at a business level on whether advertisers come back and advertisers stay with both those shows that are now starting to sell advertising space, The Apprentice spinoff and The Daytime Show. And those are big unanswered questions, because is this a circus that will last in terms of the interest that Martha attracts and the compelling, sustaining connection she has with consumers that will drive ad dollars?
Mm-hmm.
Or is this a momentary media frenzy, partly engineered by Martha's folks,
right,
that ends in, that tapers off and has a very short half-life?
Is she being set up to be kind of whacked down again?
That's always a risk for public figures that ride the roller coaster of American media-driven fame.
Kirk Hansen, she's going to have be appearing on the Today Show a few times a month, have a daily show, I believe, on NBC, different from her previous show, perhaps more like an interviewer. And she'll have this Apprentice knockoff where she's playing the Donald Trump role. How does that look to you for her to keep this this kind of new image of the humbled woman of the people visage alive?
Well, this all bothers me at one level. I think this is representative of the fact that the American society is very focused on media stars. We have a kind of a rock star or superstar society in which we make heroes out of everyone who rises to the top of companies or everyone who hits a few more home runs than others. This is a bit uncomfortable because we tend to then be much quicker to forgive the sins of those who have become our heroes. It seems today it's more important that Martha is a celebrity than that she is a convicted felon. And that says something about America I don't know that we should be entirely comfortable about.
If it's a society today that's all about winning, does that mean that we've changed somehow in the way we weigh the virtue of people? In fact, is it more admired to be a player? I mean, in the mm-hmm. hip-hop world, to have that kind of gangsta factor, we won't apply that to Martha yet. But she's a player in that she's bunked with a cocaine dealer and come out. Does that make her somehow a more admirable figure that she's done jail time in America today.
I think that's perhaps gives her a veneer of being a person of the people. But the reality is that she served her time, her very short time, with certain comforts that are not available to others, having moved apparently directly into the dormitory style as opposed to where most of the...
She wasn't in the big bunkhouse with 500 other women and no doors on the shower stall.
And I think her story is also one in which we remain focused on her being a celebrity. You know, as she took off last night, and I caught just a bit of the show, and I said, I can't believe they're covering live her departure from prison.
Yeah.
I thought of Jocko. I thought of Michael Jackson standing on top of his limousine and rallying his supporters. Somehow we seem to be able to look away from behaviors of our celebrities and be quick to forgive them in ways that we're not quick to forgive people who aren't as successful and who aren't as much of a household name.
A kind of new royalty where there's a special pass for the monarchs.
Well, that's what I worry about. I think the person who hits the most home runs or the scientist who comes up with the first big discovery or the CEO of one of our companies, or in this case, the first woman CEO to get the kind of attention that Martha has gotten, somehow we've defined them to be our new royalty. And as a result, we're willing to look the other way when they engage in bad behavior. And I don't think that's good long term for the country.
We've got a lot of callers who want to join us. I want to turn to them. Paul is calling from Brookline, Massachusetts. Hi, Paul. You're on the air.
Hi, how's everyone?
Just fine, Paul. What's on your mind?
What I wanted to comment on, I guess, join the general chorus in that. I feel that Martha was rather fortuitous in that she's had events played behind her, such as Kenneth Fastow and Ken Lay, and people look at those people who really feel, I think the general public feels, they literally raided their companies and used them as their own private piggy banks, whereas we could look at what Martha did and say, well, you know what? I can almost see myself doing that. A friend of mine comes up to me. I have some stock. They say, hey, maybe you should sell it.
So she made $60,000, we're told, on that, Paul. If you went out and stole $60,000, how many years do you think you'd get?
Well, I don't think people look at it as her stealing it. I mm-hmm. think when you look at it, I think it becomes what your last guest just was talking about in terms of, in a sense of moral ethics in society, I think it's much more acceptable for people to look at what Martha did and put themselves in that situation and say, I can see myself doing that.
I could have been there.
And they don't look at it as stealing, like you're saying, you know, go
right,
to a bank.
Right, right. I could have walked in those well-chosen shoes, no doubt. But that's interesting in itself. Everybody can be a trimmer today. Paul, thanks for your call. Let's get another call here. Eric is calling from Boston. Hi, Eric. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I have enormous respect for people like Barbara, who've been on your show, and your ethicist. But I think there's a bigger story to this entire ordeal, and that is this enormous fascination and enjoyment that the American people take in taking shots at those who've actually attained the American dream.
Taking shots at them.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, it fascinates me every year when we listen to the State of the Union address and how those who represent the quote-unquote top 1% or top one-half of 1% of America are become the pariahs, become the enemy. In this country, you're encouraged to reach the American dream, but once you attain the American dream, our fascination turns to shooting you down.
So you're also ready to discount the felony here, Eric. You say, never mind.
You know, I'm as a lawyer, I thoroughly understand the difference between a felony and a misdemeanor. And I think anybody who understands the level of corporate crime that goes on in this country understands this was a fancy misdemeanor or a really petty felony.
Eric, we got it. And thanks very much for your call. Nancy Kane, all right, there's a lot going on here. The cross currents you described at the outset are raging around us here. Let's just look at what she did. Now, it wasn't Enron, and it wasn't WorldCom, But it wasn't right either.
She lied to prosecutors. She was convicted by a jury of her peers of lying to prosecutors.
So is this now just okay? And we look at it and say, well, I mean, everybody who had that kind of money
wrong. Mm-hmm. How can we say that this is okay? I think the fascinating thing here is what constitutes our conception of success, and what constitutes a role model or celebrity.
Well,
is it all about
she's
the
got a
money
billion
and
dollars.
Fame?
Is that it?
Is the equation money plus fame equals success and celebrity? I mean, to compare her to Gandhi or to compare her to Martin Luther King, who served jail time, is to miss the extraordinary purpose for which they went to jail and the purpose of their lives and what they strove to do for others. And she doesn't fit in that file folder anyway. She is not about that. And she did wrong, and she has admitted no wrongdoing. And we need to ask ourselves as a society what it means to have these kind of folks that we want to put up on pedestals, take them down, and put them up again.
And yet, on the other hand, you hear people saying she didn't rip people off like some of the big boys did. So let's acknowledge that.
Let's acknowledge that. But that doesn't exonerate what she did.
I want to turn right now to New York again. We're joined there by Howard Davidowitz. He's chairman of Davidowitz & Associates. It's a national consulting and investment banking company. Mr. Davidowitz, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thanks for inviting me.
We hope you'll look with us for a minute at the stock price here. There's been this tremendous run-up from $8 and something to way over 30 while Martha was in prison. Is it justified? Is it going to stay up there?
Well, the price is crazy because the company's selling at 9x revenue is absolutely unheard. You know, Federated just bought the May Company. The May Company makes hundreds of millions in profits, $400 million, one-time revenue.
Huge department stores.
Huge! They make what? They were sold at one-time
revenue. One-time revenue, and her stock is valued at 9x.
Nine-times revenue and losing $60 million.
You're the analyst. How do you analyze it? How do you interpret what's going on?
Martha's magic. In other words, this is magic, girl. She has such an allure. She's a woman who's created an empire. You know, there's a lot of people in real estate who've made billions.
Sure.
There's a lot of hedge funds managers who made billions. There's a lot of Wall Street entrepreneurs who made billions. But have you ever heard of a caterer who made billions?
Okay, that's
Are
special.
You kidding?
Okay, that's a special thing. Can it last? Can she float this boat? Can she? And more than that, can she get out and somehow reintegrate with this company where she's no longer chairman or CEO and be an effective player?
You just asked a key question. The company needs focus. It needs a manager. It's only a $180 million company. SEC problem. She can't be the CEO, can't be a member of the board. She's got the voting stock. Is she going to get along with Susan Lime? Her friend, the president, is out, who she spent a long time with.
Yeah.
The head of the magazine is gone. Martha comes back. She's got to assess the landscape. She's got no authority to run everything. We have a very complex situation. The book is out on how this place is going to get managed.
Does it help or hurt the stock that she's going to be all over television?
You know something? I think it's going to hurt the stock, and here's the problem. When Martha was in jail, we could fantasize. The problem always with the stock market is when reality, the stock was down over 3 points today.
Yeah.
You know why? It's reality time. Now now everybody who bought the stock is saying, you know something, $60 million, they're going to lose money again. She can't run the company. All the advertisers, what the hell is going to happen? The market is now going to start to face reality. I think this stock price has a long way to go. I think if it were $10 a share, it would be fairly priced.
I was going to ask you whether to buy, sell, or hold, but I guess I don't have to.
It's a short.
Howard Davidowitz, thank you so much for being with us tonight. I guess we know where you stand.
Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks for being with us. Howard Davidowitz, chairman of Davidowitz & Associates in New York. Let's get one more call. George is calling from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Hi, George. You're on the air.
Yeah, hello. Oh, I've been listening to this coming back from the gym. Oh, God, it's just so pathetic to hear about it again.
You don't want to hear about it at all. Like, take it away.
You know, I work in the investment community. I'm held accountable every day. And then I have to hear about Martha Stewart. It's just, again, it's pathetic. There are no values. Who was that, Rabinowitz? Yeah, I say short the thing on Monday.
And you don't like that she she worked the system. She cut corners and doesn't appear to have paid too dearly for it.
Well, that's right, and I think I agree, and I think the American investor needs to get out there and start voting. And I think we should stay away from companies like this.
Well,
and we should reward the good companies by buying those stocks, the good stocks.
There's the guy.
The good companies with the good boards and the good people.
Well, there's the guy who's out there working every day and doesn't like the Martha model. George, thanks very much for calling. Wow, Nancy Kane. There's a lot of energy around this woman all the time. You know, they said just spell the name right, and success is lying out there somewhere. What's your sense? Does all this energy add up to a bright future for Martha Stewart, or a bigger boulder than she can push up the
door? I think it adds up to a couple of very, very sunny days here, and then some big, big questions. Not just questions. I mean, Howard talked about the huge business issues that are looming and important, the reality issue with the street. I think there are also issues of, will Martha fit these new television formats? I mean, a lot rides on that. Will she be a good fit with a Donald Trump spinoff and with an Oprah-like talk show?
Is it time for her to be seen saying, you're fired? We'll come back and look at that. Nancy Kane, please stand by. Kirk Hansen in California. We're talking tonight about Martha Stewart's prison makeover. You can join us. Were you in Martha's corner before the scandal? Are you in her corner now? And what's the message to all of us in this big Martha story? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Martha Stewart out of prison, looking at the rebirth of a billionaire ex-con. You can join us tonight. What do you make of the post-prison resurrection so far of Martha Stewart? Gandhi, Martin Luther King, Nelson Mandela all gained stature from jail time. Does Martha Stewart deserve the ex-con elevation? Has she paid her dues? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm here tonight with Nancy Kane of Harvard Business School and Kirk Hansen, a business ethicist at Santa Clara University in California. Right now, Joseph is calling from Greensboro, North Carolina. Hi, Joseph. You're on the air.
Hey, how y'all doing?
We're great, thanks. What's on your mind?
Well, I think it's kind of bittersweet.
Mm-hmm.
Bitter in the sense that, like her cellmate, selling cocaine will probably not have a good record when she comes out of jail. It, like Martha will. Martha's all fine and dandy.
Right.
The wealth and power usually gets it. It's sweet, though. It kind of inspires and encourages those that who do serve time that if she can do it and get out, get back in the system, get back in everyday life, then they can too.
But as you say, Joseph, she came in with a lot of bank, and she went out with even more. Not exactly your typical, walking out of prison gal.
I know. It's like if she can do it, why not everybody else?
Well, there's always that great American dream to hang on to, and she certainly is an exemplar of it. Joseph, thank you for your call. Let's get another call here. Bill is calling from Norfolk, Massachusetts. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Yes. Good evening, Tom. How are you?
Great. Thanks, Bill. What do you think?
I just think that, in general, essentially what we've done is we've glorified the wrong, and I think in large part, and I'd be curious to get your panel's discussion on it, we've basically, I think, in some respects, set women back in business a tremendous amount by glorifying effectively what Martha has done over this period.
Well, during the time of her scandal. We've got it, Bill, and thanks for your call. Kirk Hansen, let me put that to you. You're concerned about this winner-take-all society where even cheating is okay if you end up a winner. Does it make everybody who plays by the rules out to be a chump?
Well, I think that's the danger, Tom, is that the rest of us who don't engage in the kind of shoddy behavior that some people do wonder if the reason we're not getting ahead is that we don't cut the corners that others do. I think the challenge right now is for us to communicate to our kids and to others, to the students that Nancy and I teach, that there should be another message here other than you can commit a crime and still come out on top. We've got to communicate that there's a price to pay for what Martha has done, and this is a terrible lesson as communicating that. I thought it was fascinating earlier when Eric argued, hey, everybody tries to tear down people from the pedestal. Mm. Well, just remember, we put them up there. This culture takes people who are on top, gives them fabulous wealth, and makes them into heroes that can do no wrong.
Nancy, if TV exposure is a mark of public acceptance, and I guess you'd have to say in a way it is, she's going to be all over the place. Now, you were saying before, a lot will hinge on how she comes across in her new TV role. Now, as I understand it, this is not going to be the old trimming pie crust role. What do you know about what's in the works?
We know just a little bit because Mark Burnett and NBC have kept the real specifics to
Mark
themselves.
Mark Burnett, this is the Survivor creator.
Right, but he's also involved. He's been
more.
Involved in her yep. entire television strategy. Mm-hmm. At least from what we read. We know very little, but we know that it's likely to be a five-day-a-week talk show format, including some real interactivity, some interaction with a live audience.
Now that's interesting because she's no Oprah in temperament, one perceives. She's not the empathetic, warm, let me hear your story. She's kind of the boss.
We have not seen that at all. Quite the opposite. We've seen a very controlling, very, you know, a very demanding woman with very high standards and very set opinions about how things are to be done. Mm-hmm. That's a very different kind of personality than one that one would expect in a interactive listening environment where you're dealing with a lot of different opinions and very spontaneous moments over the course of, say, a 55 or 50-minute show.
Can she keep that kind of humility, twinkle in her eye, warmth going, or is she going to start judging everybody's answers for their decorum?
I think that's a big question. I think there's a second question that follows logically on that one, Tom, and that is, can she earn viewers, not just the audience in the room with her, but viewers' trust? Can she earn it and can she keep it in that kind of format? A great brand, an empathic figure that women want to watch and buy from and be with, really needs to be about trust, I think, at some fundamental level. And that's a huge question mark for her brand and her media personality
her persona,
going forward.
We'll learn a lot about what she did and didn't learn in those 5 months in prison. I mean, we read great Wall Street Journal story the other day where, you know, one of the people she was imprisoned with says within the first couple of days they were supposed to put together flowers for, I guess, a prison guard who had died. She was helping Martha, and Martha was bossy. But by the time she left, at least as reported, she had won the friendship and respect of a lot of the women in prison. Whether she's a quick learner, she's a quick study, whether she can carry that on air. Interesting. And then this apprentice format. I mean, if she's up there telling people you're fired, that hardly makes her warm, cuddly.
It does not. And again, those two formats, the talk show format, the apprentice spinoff, right now, as what we know now, present very contrasting possibilities for Martha. And also, I think, raise the kind of questions you're talking about, Tom, about will she really earn the kind of, you know, appeal and loyalty of a bunch of people she needs to be successful as a media personality and therefore be successful in her business. Mm.
Rajan is calling from Longmeadow, Massachusetts. Hi, Rajan. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thanks.
Mine is more observation than a question.
Yes.
My observation is I was amazed at the audacity or injustice of the media manipulation of comparing Martha Stewart with Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King, because the very reason or the cause they went to the jail was totally different. And also the same media is sometimes compared Princess Diana with Mother Teresa. So it is so funny and injustice to their ethics of their media manipulation itself.
Rajan, I couldn't agree with you more. Absolutely. But, I mean, it's a bit of hyperbole that people are applying. And here I'm taking from Tina Brown. She had a column in The Washington Post. But she said it used to be that going to jail gave a positive aura only to moral gurus, spiritual leaders, and revolutionaries. And then she names, you know, Gandhi, Martin Luther King, Lenin in Siberia, Eugene V. Debs, Vaclav Havel, and, of course, Nelson Mandela. And now she says, you know, now it's vanquished CEOs and burned-out celebrities getting the martyr's halo. Kirk Hansen, I mean, the point here is not ultimately to compare Martha Stewart to Gandhi or Nelson Mandela, but just to say somehow they're getting a kind of halo for shenanigans, not for moral courage.
Well, it's an interesting comparison to make, because clearly if anyone makes a reference directly to Mandela or Gandhi or Martin Luther King, it's a really cynical reference, because as Rajan has stated, this is so different, so dramatically different. Those were people of conscience who served in jail, and their time in jail was very much a part of their witness to the values that were important. Here we do have a different kind of story, which is the story of redemption, and indeed there may be a real emphasis, as there was in these stories that you were quoting from prison, which, just remember, they were all orchestrated by this media media team that is remaking her image.
Well, kind of. The Wall Street Journal reporter went down and talked with women who had served with her, so that was a little more direct than that.
Okay.
But still, Martha had a strategy going in, no doubt.
Yes, and I think, you know, we do like stories of redemption, but that doesn't mean we put them back up on the pedestal and say this is indeed our hero. We just say we admire them if they can indeed put their lives back together. But if we reestablish Martha as an icon of womanhood or successful businesswoman, I think we're missing something.
Well, I wonder. It's complicated. Kat is calling from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Hi, Kat. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to make a point that a lot of third-generation feminists believe that Martha was the victim of a word that rhymes with witch hunt, in terms of that she was being held to much higher standards than other men in corporations, for the example, you know, Tyco, Enron.
Right, right.
And a lot of people seem to think that perhaps her popularity after jail will be reflective of the fact that we don't think that the punishment fit the crime, and a lot of people do a lot worse.
That she was a victim,
was a woman,
right? A victim of
yes,
a kind of witch.
Targeted.
Nancy Kane, speak directly to Kat on this. What's your response?
I think that you know, Dennis Kozlowski and Bernie Ebers and Ken Lay of Enron are still walking around free, but those juries are still out in terms of the legal processes and the attempt to prosecute, you know, large scale wrongdoing at the corporate level. None of that exonerates what Martha Stewart did. It's of a smaller order, but she broke the law and she lied, and she has yet, an interesting twist on a story of redemption, to admit a mistake. To admit any wrongdoing. So I tend to agree with Kirk that why aren't we interested in stories of women that climb to the top? There are scores of them, and climb cleanly.
But
play by the rules and sit at the power tables. And so I think we want to be careful with saying that somehow all that Martha's done it lies at the feet of feminists. It's clear that women work harder and often pay greater tolls for mistakes than men because men hold more power. But that doesn't exonerate what Martha did. And I think it should, again, continue to urge us to question what we think is success, what we think is professional accomplishment.
Kat, thanks for that call. Our time's running down, but I just got to push this a little further with you, Nancy, because in fact, I mean, Martha may have had a headstrong personality and a controlling and all the rest, but hey, how many men who made it big have had the same thing? So she really did nothing wrong until this one thing, and which ended up being maybe taking the stock advice and it appears certainly lying. But don't you feel, so, as a business historian, seeing how hard it's been for business women to get in here, don't you feel some sympathy at the same time?
Absolutely. I think Barbara Corcoran had a lot of light to shed on what it takes to get to the top, to that place at the table. No question. And you're absolutely right. She is castigated in terms of her personality and a value for things that men at the top, you know, are complimented for. Mm. She is evaluated along axes that men would never be evaluated for. Witness the Newsweek cover and a whole discussion of of discussion about her weight and her body and her shape.
Of course, they added a model's body to her face.
Because women at the top are evaluated on whether they're pretty and thin and what their dress size is. No question, this is about huge cultural discrepancy in terms of money and metrics. And Martha is very much subject to things that no man would be subject to. I think the story, though, has many different file folders in it, including these about women and their role and their worth and who they can be at the top. But it's also a story about ethics, as Kurt has pointed out, and we want to keep all those file folders out on our desktops.
It will be fascinating to see if somehow Martha Stewart picks up the ethical issue here in her ongoing life and tries to make that one of her themes somehow. Nancy Kane, professor at Harvard Business School, wonderful to have you with us tonight. Thanks so
Real
much
pleasure.
For joining. And Kirk Hansen at Santa Clara University in Santa Clara, California, business ethicist there. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Delighted to be with you, Tom.
In a moment, one Martha Stewart devotee celebrates her hero's release. This is On Point. Around the country, Martha Stewart fans are smiling tonight. Some are even hosting parties elegant, no doubt, to commemorate the domestic diva's release from prison. One of those hosting a Martha release party tonight is Smith College senior Natalie Henderson. For the past 5 months, a 21-year-old has marked each month of Martha's imprisonment by doing a project that would make Stewart proud, from upholstering furniture to building a tabletop fountain. In this radio diary, Natalie Henderson shares her joy over Martha's release and explains why she has become such a rabid Stewart devotee.
I've been a fan of Martha Stewart pretty much since I was a little girl. I would read her entertaining cookbook instead of reading children's books. So I started getting really into her recipes, and then from there I started watching her television shows and watched her gardening shows and her cooking shows, her pet care shows. And then I started cooking a little bit more and then started reading her magazines. I really admired her passion for everything that she did. I mean, her eyes would just light up even if she were to be talking about different types of brie cheese or different types of tea. She just has amazing passion for everything that she does. And then beyond that, I think she's just incredibly strong and assertive and aggressive. Mostly I admire her work ethic. In interviews, she said that she sleeps about 4 hours a night, and sometimes when I'm working late at night on a paper until 2 a.m, you know, I'm finishing a last paragraph and I want to sleep, I just think Martha is still awake doing work. I have been following Martha's time. The first thing I did was go through my calendar and I marked off, you know, after she's been in there for 1 month, I marked that off in my calendar, and then 2 months, and 3, 4, and 5. And at each month marking, I did a project to kind of celebrate her month anniversary. I think the first one, I reupholstered some chairs that I found at a yard sale this summer. Then the second month, I repainted this wicker shelf, and I put hooks in it, and I nailed it to the wall. And then I put bud vases on it, and it's just this really simple black piece. It's about 3 feet by 2 feet, and it holds 3 different bud vases, and, you know, with flowers in it, it looks great. And then the third month, I made a water fountain. I took a offset glass bowl, filled it with river rocks, and a water fountain pump. And then the fourth month, that was after New Year's resolution, so I made this cardboard piece that would flip up. It's a New Year's resolution board. It was covered with fabric on one side and ribbons, and then you flip it up, and on the other side is a chart, and it charts all my New Year's resolutions, and there are little pieces that I place with Velcro on the chart, and then after the week has gone by, I take off the pieces and put them back on to start the new week. The fifth month is this month, and that's the cocktail party that I'm having. And I invited some of my friends to a cocktail party. It's called Martha is Free, a cocktail party with champagne and hors d'oeuvres and champagne and desserts to celebrate Martha Stewart's release. And I'm making some broiled pears with camembert cheese and prosciutto and smoked salmon with mustard and dill dressing, and then I'm going to use one of Martha's recipes, her bittersweet chocolate truffles recipe. So it's going to be a little small gathering of all Martha fans. Some people think I'm too much of a fanatic when it comes to Martha, but it starts to grow on them when I express, you know, why I enjoy Martha and why I appreciate all she's done for women in business and for, you know, people who do her different activities and her crafts. I think it grows off people.
Natalie Henderson, mega Martha fan, is a senior at Smith College in Northampton, Massachusetts. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.